What is going on, people? We are back with another episode of Throwdown. We are at episode 181, I think. I am your host, Emilio Lopez, and I'm joined by Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo. What's going on, everyone?
Brett Murdoch.
What up, people?
Brian Majoma.
Hello, hello, hello.
And Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
So, yeah, you may notice that there's a couple of people missing right now. There's a couple of people missing right now. First off, Adam is, he's handling his business. He's got, he's not feeling so good. So I hope he feels better. And Tony is abroad. He is out on the streets, out in Vegas, playing the slots.
Yo, here's what happened. We were all being chased by zombies, and then Manny just totally tripped Tony. I saw it.
Well, how does that even work with a wheelchair?
I don't know, but I'll tell you, I was impressed.
is it like Indiana Jones where you stuck the pole inside of the wheel of the motorcycle and goes flipping through the air?
Yeah, exactly.
So Tony's going to be out for this episode, and he's not going to be in for the following Throw It On Your Questions. So maybe he'll come back and be like, "What the hell did you do? What did you get?" No. So you know what? Let's just get started right now. The first thing we got going up on here is Call of Duty is going to have Godzilla and King versus King Kong. So. I don't. First of all, when I heard about this, I don't even understand how this even works, because Call of Duty obviously is a first-person shooter. So what? are you going to just be shooting on the ground, and then in this distance you see Godzilla versus King Kong?
Yeah, I mean they showed a trailer, but it doesn't really show what the gameplay is going to be.
It just looks like the movie, right? It just looks like they're So I guess you're on Skull Island, and then you're going to be fighting, like, are you going to be fighting all the crazy Skull Island things? Or are you going to be, like, how does this going to work?
I'm guessing it's going to be like Fortnite kind of stuff, where it's like you have both of them fighting in the background, and you're, like, shooting, and it's like, oh, shit's going around me, shit's nuts.
Yeah, I wonder if you could somehow affect the fight a little bit, where you can shoot like Godzilla's leg or King Kong's leg and distract him, and then he punches. Can you interact with them? I don't know. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I think the only one that would probably know about this from the panel is Adam, and I don't even know if he would know what the hell's going on, because it says Operation Monarch. I don't know what that means.
Well, Monarch
was the group in the movies that was studying kaiju.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the ones who keep King Kong on the island, and they were following Godzilla through all the movies.
Yeah,
interesting. So I thought it was going to be like Vanguard, or like, is Monarch a new game type, or what's going on here?
No, yeah, Monarch is the group that essentially kind of researched the kaijus and all that stuff, like Chris said. So it's like it's whatever is going on with that. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, because I don't know, they could surprise us, but I'm pretty sure you're not going to be able to play as Godzilla or King Kong.
No, I mean, it's probably just going to work just like the way Call of Duty sort of works, where like it has maybe an aspect of it, but you still, at its core, it's still a first person shooter game where you're playing, Rando Soldier number one, right?
Probably. And then this is Call of Duty Warzone. Okay, gotcha. I see. I'm looking at the little thingy.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Okay.
Because Warzone essentially is their Fortnite, right? It's just Battle Royale.
Yes.
Oh.
So it's probably gonna be like, the map is gonna be all surrounded. It's Skull Island, shit's going down, you're trying to survive, you're trying to fight the elements, there's thunder and lightning, there's King Kong scratching his ass.
Remember when on Fortnite where they had the Galactus event where you literally saw Galactus kind of hanging out in the distance, like no matter what angle that you saw it, he's always there, like looking over the planet.
Yeah.
All right.
But you just shoot each other. You're not going to affect them. I guarantee they're just going to be doing shit in the background.
Yeah, It's just like a, I guess it's like a cool level skin. Maybe a couple, maybe you get a couple of funky weapons, you know, like maybe, maybe because I know Monarch in the movies used to have, they had all these goofy, like, you know, super sci-fi weapons. Maybe they put that crate, like, is there vehicles in that version of it, of Call of Duty?
Oh, I don't know.
Like Fortnite?
In Warzone? I think maybe.
Yeah, there's like Jeeps and quad bikes and
okay, so
and oh, there you go.
So yeah, they'll probably make, you know, skin the bikes and stuff to be like Monarch bikes, like, you know, because they have all these crazy like hover vehicles and stuff. Like I know one movie they go through the Earth, the center of the Earth, Hollow Earth theory. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I'd be interested to see what it looks like. I'm not exactly interested in playing it per se, but you know. I know. I wonder if maybe Adam. Who knows? Maybe Adam might be like, yeah, or he might. No, he doesn't like the battle royale version. Does he?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he never cared for that.
Oh, if this was like the Predator mode Ghost Recon, Wildlands, mm-hmm. the one we played. If it was like that, where you're actually fighting the Predator or whatever, yeah, he would play it.
Oh yeah.
But if this is just like a battle royale map.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on to the next one. I call this God of Snore because, yesterday on 420, Corey Barlog decided he was going to, do a little, happy, you know, of 420 and, you know, God of War was still working on it. But the funny thing about this is that all these people thought there was going to be this huge announcement because it's also the 4-year anniversary of new God of War, you know, the God Dad of War. It's the anniversary. So that was him just coming out like, hey everybody, you know, 420, you know, came out 4 years ago, blah blah blah. Have a good time. We're still working on the game, and there you go. That's pretty much it. And that's all was happening. I'm like, you know what? Like, I think it's fine that he's like, hey, celebration. It's a celebration, bitches. And he comes out. But at the same time, it's just like, I feel like we shouldn't really expected anything like really that important from this, really. It's just him showing up on Twitter and saying, what's up? It's 4 years. We're still working on the game. That's about it.
Well, I didn't expect anything from this, so I'm. Well, we're in an age now where people hype themselves up for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, this happens very often. Like you see this all the time with Nintendo fans. There's an anniversary. Oh my God, there's going to be this, and then they start wish casting.
Yeah.
Spouting it like it's like fact, you know, mm-hmm. and then they get pissed off when it doesn't happen. It's like, no, you made that up. You got yourself hyped up on your own bullshit, and then you started telling people it was real, and then you got mad when it don't happen.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's why I called it "Got a Snore," because it's like, all right, Corey's saying some stuff. Yeah.
It's been 4 years since God of War. It seems like it's been like two. I guess you know Rona probably messed it up, but 2018, man, that's.
It's
weird. A long time now.
It seems like 4 years sounds like a lot, but like mental wise, it's like you think of like, you know, 2020 and 2021, they're sort of like a blur. They're almost like 1 year combined.
Yeah.
And not much happened then.
Yeah, so there you go. So can't wait
for
that.
Yeah, but Chris is right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Chris is right. This is the classic people set up their own expectations and are let down by their own freaking, you know, headcanon, essentially.
Exactly.
So yeah, this is much of nothing. It's a good message to celebrate a really good game, but Ragnarok, it's been really quiet these last couple of months, and we've made predictions on Throwdown. I don't think this game's gonna come out this year, but we'll see.
I mean, I definitely feel the same way. I don't think it's gonna really come out this year, but we'll see. We'll see. When usually about this usually E3 time they sort of start saying about when things are starting to actually drop. So maybe during the summer or something like that, it'll just show up and be like, hey, it's coming out.
Maybe Jeff Keighley will get the exclusive.
Well, I'm sure he does because he's got that connect right now.
He's got, yeah, he does have the Sony Kinect.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there you go.
The Microsoft one though.
Yep. So yeah, the next one. This is our featured topic. There was actually a pretty interesting announcement this week where Amy Hennig is actually going to be coming back. Well, not coming back, but she's going to be making a Star Wars game. But she just got let go from a Star Wars game, so she's coming back to making a new Star Wars game. So now we get to see what, well, maybe we won't see whatever that EA game was, but we will get to see what an Amy Hennig Star Wars game will be. It's interesting because like a lot, like that Sundance company, they really seem to be like doubling down on like catching as many like high profile people as possible. I mean, you know, I know they picked up John Lasseter and they picked up a bunch of people, former Pixar guys, to work on a bunch of animated features.
Look at that. Well, who's bankrolling them? Yeah, they're picking up some high profile people.
Yeah, they got so, go ahead.
And they're big enough to have, so they have animation, and then she got her own media group. Like, yep. She's the president of that part of Skydance.
Yeah,
God damn.
Yeah, the game, like the gaming division, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
so this is Amy Hennig's second Star Wars attempt, or I forget the timeline, and I forget the people who are always involved with these Star Wars games. It seems like half of the industry has been involved.
This is her second attempt at a Star Wars game, because remember, like recently, Star Wars or Lucasfilm went to multiple companies can license the Star Wars property as opposed to just being EA. I'm sure it's because of all that silliness that happened with Battlefield and all that bad press that they got. So now they sort of, opened it up to multiple studios to make different things. That's why you have I can't remember who's doing the Indiana Jones game at Microsoft, and you know, Skydance got one, Ubisoft has got a Star Wars game. So they all got their own Star Wars games that are all licensed through Lucasfilm. Lucasfilm Games, as they call it now, which is the umbrella that it is. So yeah, I mean, it's cool to see that she's going to be doing it again. I wish it was what was the code name? It was like Star Wars Rogues or something like that, that she had the code name for it, or Rogues. So I'm wondering.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm wondering if it's going to be that, or if it's just going to be something totally new.
It's good.
And I'm wondering, you know, we have this Star Wars announcement, and every time there's like a new Star Wars game, everyone mentions 1313.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man.
And you know, it'd be interesting. And the whole thing with Amy Hennig, what is the last thing she's worked on? I always, because you know, at this point, it seems like they're just names now. I can't even tie them to video games anymore.
I mean, the last thing that she had worked on...
Was it The Last of Us?
Well,
the first one?
Yeah, it was the first Last of Us, and she... and the Uncharted 4, she was also a part of that, but she left, as they say.
Right.
I don't know if they, you know... I don't want to put any, you know, any controversy behind it, but yeah, they say that she left the project. So, and then Neil Druckmann essentially totally reworked it, supposedly.
Interesting.
So, I mean, you know, again, like it's nice to see that she's back doing it. I mean, she has history, like even like before, like all of this Uncharted and Naughty Dog stuff, she pretty much created the, the script for the lore of the Legacy of Kain games. She did the first one and she did the second one. So it's sort of just like she always has been in that sort of narrative driven sort of titles.
Well, I mean, it's good that all of these people are getting their Star Wars games, because it seems like, you know, some, you might have your misses like the Battlefronts, or you might get your hits like the Fallen Order. So,
yep.
You know, with Star Wars, everyone's getting a try, and we're going to see who's up for the task. So hopefully Amy Hennig can do it. Can do a good one.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm interested to see what comes out of all of this.
Or not.
You know? I don't know. Damn. It's weird. It's weird. It's so weird because like Amy Henning and what's her face?
Jade Raymond.
Jade Raymond. They just seem to got the like.
They get the shaft.
Man. Yeah, they seem to get the shaft. They're working on these titles, and then EA's just like bah, and then you know, what's if she goes over to the Google and just like bah. So like
Jade Raymond got the double whammy with Google
Stadia, right?
Yeah, Stadia, yeah.
Stadia and Phil Harrison stink.
Oh yeah, she got both of it.
He's the anti Midas touch. Whatever the opposite of that is.
Exactly.
But, you know, I don't really blame her for that, but yeah, hopefully you know. I want to see these games already, man. We've been talking about these for like. Seems decades at this point, so hopefully something comes into fruition.
By the way, sup Fergus, sup folks in the chat, how's everybody doing?
Yo, man, shout out to Fergus Mills, man.
Yeah, he just showed up right there. He says what's up, people. Amy Henning needs her own studio.
Well, she basically is running this, right? I mean, she's president of the Skydance gaming thing, so I mean, you're the boss. Right? Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. So hopefully it all turns out well for her. Let's see. What do we got next up here? Oh, this is what I call the Sega block, because we got a lot of Sega news that sort of just dropped all at once. So first one right here I got is Streets of Rage, the movie. And I captured this as it's already a bomb. Come on. It seems like a simple concept. Three cops, you know, essentially beating the hell out of people, you know. Right? But
yeah.
But then you look at like something like a Max Payne movie. The simplest idea. Everything's all written out on that movie, what that movie could be. And they just totally throw that out the window and just said, "All right, we're making our own." Mark Wahlberg,
yeah, Max
do what you
Payne
do.
Had a good story.
Yes, it did.
This doesn't.
Really this I mean, it's the simple thing. It's just like, oh, save the city. It's like making a Final Fight movie where it's like you can just beat up everybody. So like, I guess they're gonna make it a cop drama. You know.
I mean, I guess it's vague and amalgamous enough that you can put anything to it. But like, let me ask, like. Did it? Who's asking for this? Are there crowds of people clamoring for this?
That's
fucking thing to be made.
See, that's the thing. I think the only reason why anybody's really interested, you know, like the film industry's even interested in it, is because the game did pretty good and it's in the zeitgeist of people right now.
Well, and Sonic did good, but like my question is like, I understand that there are some industries that give the people what they want. There are some industries that tell the people what they want. But this does not seem like it's just so far from the pulse of what I think people are asking for. And they're just like, oh, well, I mean, the Sonic movie did well. It's coming out with a second one. Yeah, so like, people like video game movies, right? Like,
exactly.
Jesus Christ, it's not that simple.
Well, Brett, you got to remember this. There's two thinkings. There's what we as video game fans would like to see. I mean, honestly, I don't trust these guys to make a decent movie on anything. I think Sonic is like an anomaly, right? I think it's like, it's the exception. And the rule is like Max Payne and all the other shit movies that they've made, Tomb Raider. What these executives see, they look at the Sega IPs and they're like, okay, what's safe? They look at all the things they could take from it and they're like, eh, but you see three cops who go rogue and beat up thugs on the street. And you're like, okay, we could work with that, right? That seems safe, relatively. They can water it down and adjust as much as they want. And believe me, they're going to water it down because that game is a product of like the late 80s, early 90s. And if you remember cop shows and movies back in the day, cops were just blowing away thugs like, fuck it. You got Clint Eastwood going out in the street. He should just shoot dudes like... That's the time that those games came from, right? Where it's like street justice. You just go out and do it. I don't think you can get away with telling that story now.
It would have to be a total throwback movie in order for it to be like, it would have to be like Streets of Fire. Like it would have to be like just ball to the wall, like action movie. But I don't, I almost feel like Hollywood is like incapable of making a film like that anymore, just pure entertainment, as opposed to just like this wacky silliness.
Almost need to be like a spoof of itself.
Yeah.
Well, it would have to be like Kung Fury, right? It's like you just have to go all ridiculous. Like you're all in on the there's these three cops beating up shitloads of gang members, and the city is so infested with crime that they just walk down the street and punch everyone along the way till they get to the mastermind, who's this rich guy in the tower or something.
I mean, if you think, Kung Fury was pretty much that, right? Like he begins the movie where he like literally like jumps a car in and it beats the hell out of a bunch of people in the streets.
Yeah, that's it. You know, you just have to go balls to the wall. But I think that thing worked because it was like independent movie. Hollywood didn't make that. They couldn't make that. I don't think they could make this.
Yeah. I mean, all I was seeing is like, you know, like they say a film, but I'm like, they'll probably make it into some sort of silly series or something like that to keep people watching every week, but I don't know how you can make like beating the shit out of everybody in make that interesting enough to keep around for like six episodes.
The interesting thing about this is you're making a video game tied movie because you want that brand recognition that you know is going to sell, right? Streets of Rage is not that type of property. It's an old ass property that only people over 35 know of for the most part. And it's a generic, you know, beat 'em up game. Well, I mean, I'm saying generic in the sense where, you know, there's a bunch of beat 'em up games when they came out. It's like there's nothing, a hedgehog that runs faster than almost the speed of light. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's hard to make a good movie, but at least it's a premise, and Sonic is a huge name. But Streets of Rage is just a dude bro movie at this point. So why? What's the motive of a movie studio to make an IP, make a movie about this IP when they're gonna have to cut part of the profits to the people who own the property or the IP?
So, I mean, yeah, you don't actually need it to be called Streets of Rage to make this movie if you ever wanted to, right?
Yes.
Like, it's just a name to slap on this type of movie. But again, like what do you do to it to essentially make it into a movie? Like, are you going to make it all deep and like, oh, man, I have these battles and I need to fight them in the streets? You know, you give Axel some sort of internal monologue. Like, what do you do with this? It's just, again, it's like such a simple premise.
My rage will fill the streets.
Yeah.
It'll be Streets of Rage.
Oh, or like, you know, like my burn knuckle. Like, how does that even work? Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead.
I guess, like, the closest thing I can think of in terms of a film would be some sort of cross between The Raid in terms of like martial arts and like a small space and John Wick, kind of.
Give it to the Hong Kong guys. There you go.
Because The Raid is in Hollywood. Like The Raid is really good, but that wasn't made here.
Barry Burton says, just follow the King of Fighters tournament. You mean get Eric Roberts? Or was that Dead or Alive? I can't remember.
Dead or Alive, yeah. Oh. Oh, man.
And also, Brett, to answer your question, it's the same people who asked for the Uncharted movie and the Halo TV show.
Oh, God.
So nobody.
Exactly.
It's a name. Hey, it's a name that you recognize. Don't you want to see the movie show?
Yeah. No, it's just these executives like, you know, Sonic made money. We want more money. Well, what else can we take? Sonic, what else you got?
Sonic made money. What? Hey, Sega, you got things. What do you got? We'll make movies of those.
Yeah. And they just pull out the catalog, and they're like, nah, this is too Japanese. So is this one. Yakuza, this Japanese. They just go through it, and they're like, they see this blonde white dude, this chick, and this black guy punching gang members, and they're like, oh, wait, what's this?
What's this? Yeah, there you go. So that's one of the Sega block. Here we got the next one is Sega is going to be rebooting Crazy Taxi and Jet Set Radio into Fortnite likes. That's at least what
I was excited for half a second, man.
Yeah,
he had to pause, like,
Brett,
that.
I knew Brett would be like, wait, excuse me, Jet Set Radio. And then, like, no, have a Fortnite pet radio.
Yeah.
Is that what you wanted?
God damn, no, this is a pet cemetery situation now.
Sometimes dead is better. They say in the next 2 to 3 years, and the people who are close to their project said that they're looking for Fortnite. So my guess is Crazy Taxi is going to be like that PlayStation 5 exclusive that came out not long ago.
PlayStation Battle All-Stars.
It'll be like that, Battle All-Stars. Maybe it's going to be like that, and you're going to be driving your taxi around. And I don't understand. I don't get the idea, why it has to be these sort of massive multiplayer things. Like, why can't it just, maybe arcade-y type games are totally dead. But I think those games, Jet Set is a little less arcadey, but it's so much purer. And now we're getting into this section like, hey, you can play with your friends. But I'm like, I could see the Jet Set Radio world if it were ever to be done as an online thing, whereas you have your whatever your open world, and everybody else is all skating around while you're doing your shit too. Like, I could see, like, in other words, like, kind of like our Souls games here, right? Where you still see the guys hanging out and doing stuff in the world, but they don't really effectfully until you want to, right?
And this is sort of reminds me of the what we just talked about earlier with Streets of Rage. It's like,
yeah,
you're rebooting a franchise into something that is something that it's not known for. In this case, it's a game to a game though, but it's like you're rebooting a franchise that pretty popular in the when they were at the height of their powers, but you're rebooting it into a genre that is nothing like the genre that it used to be. And I mean, you already have Fortnite and everything else. How is it going to compete?
Yeah, like, we see what, like, Fortnite likes do. Like, there's no other thing that's out there that even catches up to what Fortnite is doing. So why are there so many people studios trying to kind of get their own?
If I was Sega, I would partner with Fortnite. I'd be like, hey, we got Crazy Taxi, we got Jet Set Radio. Let's work on, on adding these to Fortnite. That would be a better strategy because people would automatically be, looking into this.
Mm-hmm. But to be honest, like, if the smartest way to do Fortnite would be to also have a joint thing at the same time, kind of like the way Marvel does whenever their movies come out, they make the deal with Fortnite. Hey, look, we put Moon Knight in there. Hey, look, it's Spider-Man. Because the movie just came out. So why can't you do something like that at the same to essentially promote the game at the same time? So you make your new Jet Set Radio game, but you can have some of the characters in there. You make your new Jet Set Radio game, and then you have your Fortnite, crossover. I don't know. Maybe you get
something.
Maybe you get some crazy taxi cars, like the one, your special car is the crazy taxi car that can literally like bump around and flip all over the place and jump.
Obviously, the only thing that Epic would be like, if it's like, oh, you want Crazy Taxi and Jet Set Radio on Fortnite, yeah, no problem. But Sega's got a lot more other franchises that are a lot more popular than these, and we would like those too. So. They'd probably want a lot of Sega properties. It's like, hey, can we have Sonic?
They'd probably be like, nah, we don't want Sonic running around with a gun.
There is also that too, where the franchise holders, like, maybe not, like, they're not too keen on having their characters with machine guns, even if they are shooting like fake bullets or whatever. If they're using real bullets in there, right? I don't know.
I think, aren't they?
Yeah, those look like guns. I don't know, but yeah, I always thought that was like just seeing Ryu with a gun was just like weird. I'm like, ugh, Ryu and Chun-Li running around with guns. But it's what do they call it? It's what was that movie? It's trying to be that sort of idea. I can't remember the name of that. Anyway, moving on. So this is the good. Sonic, there's going to be a Sonic collection that's coming out. It's going to include a Sonic 1. We've talked about this before, but now they've actually done an official reveal, and they showed a really nice trailer, which is done by the guys who did Sonic Mania. And it's going to be Sonic 1, 2, 3, Sonic CD, and Sonic and Knuckles. And what they did is they essentially, you can pretty much play all the games with all the characters if you want to, but you can also play them in classic mode as well. So, you know, it's got all that sort of stuff. So all for all you Sonic fans out there, you'll be like, yeah! Riku is interesting because he's not that into the classic Sonic games. He likes he likes up from Sonic Adventure and on. He's into those. Oh,
that's
sorts.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah.
He is a Sonic Adventure apologist.
Yeah. I mean, I here's the thing. I like Sonic Adventure. I can't but then again, I haven't played it in over 20 years. So yeah, maybe I play it as oh, what is this? I mean, granted, back then I was Big the Cat fishing mode. Yeah. Chow Garden. Yes,
I mean that's good. I don't know. I think I think people want a Sonic Mania 2. I think that's what everyone's waiting for.
I sort of think that's what this is sort of trying to jump off of. It's sort of it has a lot of the look of Sonic, Sonic Mania, the way they're sort of packaging it. Even the covers and everything look very Sonic Mania like, and they call it Sonic Origins. By the way,
mm-hmm.
that's a fun they always have to put Origins whenever they do the old games. They put them out again, or it's either it's Origins or Collection.
So here's the thing: I'm looking at the trailer, and obviously it's hard to tell, but
yeah,
I wonder is it getting touched up or anything? Some of the classic games, or
it says that the tiles are getting redone or whatever, but I didn't know. I didn't see that in there. But one of the things that it did do was that it looks like it does do is it fills up the whole screen. So as opposed to it being because it's based off of the from what I read, it's based off of the Christian Whitehead remasters that he did years ago, where he essentially rebuilt all of the games and put them out on for mobile and for the PlayStation 3 and all that sort of stuff. So it's those versions of those games using his engine. But it's, so it could be, fixed and sort of that. So that's why you could do essentially it was full screen as opposed to being boxed in like the classic ones. But you can actually play them in classic mode. And but again, they added the ability to play Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles throughout all the different games and all that sort of stuff. So it's like those games, but, sort of plus.
Interesting. I hope for the best for them, but I just hope they don't do a freaking Nintendo with the Super Mario 3D All-Stars collection where they did some shitty ass ports that for the games. So.
Yeah, it's not officially a port. It's actually just a modern game. And that guy, that Christian Whitehead guy, did all this crazy research into how Sonic jumps and all this sort of stuff, and that's how he was able to recreate those games. And essentially they have a lot of the quality of life things that from previous games. So if you played Sonic CD back in the day, there were certain things that didn't work out. So there's a united control scheme that sort of goes between them if you want it to be that way, or you could just play it in classic mode where Sonic didn't do certain things. It was interesting. But there is a dark side to this.
Ba-ba-bum.
The dark side is that there are a bunch of different tiers of DLC, and depending on which each different version of this thing, you don't get certain things from the other. There's this really complicated DLC thing, a DLC chart that tells you it's a special edition, it's a collector's edition, that this doesn't have that, and that doesn't have this, and a lot of the things that they're busting, cutting off, it's classic music or some other alternate soundtracks or all kinds of other different things that I'm like, guys, why don't you just have two versions and just call it a day? If bare bones version, one with all the bullshit. or just one, but they have to, like, I don't know. There's some seriously weird things going on at Sega. Like, they're getting into NFTs the other time, and then they're doing all this other stuff. It seems like they're really, like, trying to get some, you know, grind some money out of things. So, like, now it's like, it's a cool game, but then it's got all this goofy, like, you know, parsed out DLC crap.
That's weird.
Yeah. I think on the link, you guys could see what it looks like. It's like there's like five different tiers. And two of them are like, say, coming soon. Oh, go Brian.
Yeah, I've seen that graph and it just made my head hurt because I'm like, I don't understand it. Like, firstly, who made this choice? Who said, okay, let's have like all these different things that you can choose from? Like, again, as Manny said, why not just have like the two versions where it's like, hey, like this is like your base game version, you know? This is what it has, the game and whatever, you know? And then say, okay, let's have a pre-order bonus where you get these extra things, and then have the full edition where you get everything. Simple, you know, clean, simple,
exactly.
Easy to convey, but rather they had this amazingly complex chart, which I don't know if they thought it out properly and they said, okay, this is actually makes sense. Again, I just wouldn't be like a fly on the wall when people said, yes, this is a good idea. because it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, I've seen like some convoluted charts of games before, mostly Ubisoft titles, but I think this is just, it's hands down the most complex thing. Something so simple as there's a base game versions and there seems to be two DLCs by the sounds of it, or two lots of content, and then there's the full version.
Again, but it's like, why does there need to be DLC on top of a classic old game? Like, what are you doing? You know?
You said, it's like, they're just like giving you stuff that you can unlock in the game faster. It's just kind of weird. One of them, which I thought was really funny, was in a Sonic game, they said that you get 100 coins. It's like, does that mean that you get 100 restarts or you get 100 rings? It's like,
you get 100 rings.
That's like, stupid.
Yeah.
Because if you have coins, then so what? You can use them for something? So, like arcade coins, but if you run out, then what? The game just stops working? It's like, how does that make sense? Like, it's just so much confusion over something that does not need to happen.
Exactly. It's just a classic game. Just put out the game, you have two different versions of it, and then you call it a day. But now we gotta get into all this piecemeal BS. Like, oh, wait, you didn't get this one, so you can't get this. One of the things was animated menus. Yeah, it was like some sort of animated. It was like some sort of thing that said some sort of like animate, like some menu animation or something like that. So I'm like, what?
Man,
that's like the old DVDs when they used to put it on the back that like the special feature was interactive menus.
Yeah, good interactive menus.
That was like a special feature.
It's like it better be interactive. I should be able to play this disc, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the day, you know, when you used to stick in old DVDs, they used to just stick them in and
they just start. Yeah.
But yeah. So that's the unfortunate side of this thing. There's like yeah, and then you're like, oh.
Yeah, there really shouldn't be a freaking shot chart of things you can get on a remastered game,
mm-hmm.
of a remastered 30-year-old game at that. You know, it's dumb. It's what's the point of this? Come on, Sega, you know better than this.
Exactly. So. Wow, we're getting close to we're only 41 minutes? That's crazy. Well, anyway, so I just threw this in.
We do got games we've been playing.
We could always have that at the end. So, but yeah, speaking of the games that we've been playing, well, like kind of except for me and Brian, Elden Ring. I mean, I threw this in here before because Chris actually put this into our chat before. And this is something that's interesting. The recent patch on there has kind of funkied around the game a little bit. At least from the video that I saw, it's, the usually bosses that have second forms, if you hit them before they do their second form thing, they instantly die or something like that.
Yeah, Chris. if you cause like proc damage on them before they go into the second phase. So let's say you cause blood loss or frostbite or poison to a boss that has two phases. Basically, so they go in the second phase, they have a cutscene or they do some animation, right? The guy in the video, he was fighting the fire giant. And the fire giant has a cutscene, stops when you get him to 50% health. But what he did, if he got blood loss on him, he went in the cutscene, he skipped the cutscene, and when he was out, and the fire giant kneels, and he's supposed to throw the fire, his health instantly just goes to zero, and he dies. Right? And then this other guy did it with this Godskin duo. He caused them to have blood loss, and then they did the animation to go into their second form, and they just died. The health bar just goes to zero. So it's a glitch that they introduced in the new patch where if you do proc damage on bosses that have two phases, they will, and you get it before they go to phase two, they'll just instantly die.
Interesting.
Well, I think that was a response to, as somebody who deals proc and status damage as their primary character in Elden Ring, the problem would become, like, if you Scarlet Rot a boss, and then they go into their second, their second phase, and they do the animation, everything like that, like, by the time they pop back, your Scarlet Rot is, like, gone 50% of the time. So I'd have to, you know, if I'm stacking status effects, I'm doing Black Flame, I'm doing Fire, I'm doing Poison, I'm doing Scarlet Rot, half that shit's just over. You know, so I specifically had to wait to proc a lot of the status effects until the second phase. So I think what they're trying to do is stop that from being wasted, because a lot of times it's harder to get into proc a second time.
Yeah, but they overdid it, because now the bosses just get killed as soon as something, I don't know, probably the way they coded it, like you said, Brett, they just reset the status. So what they probably did is amplify the status, which causes their health to just drop to zero instantly.
Well, actually, I would guess before they were immune to proc damage during cutscenes, but the timer still ran on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're not immune, but the timer still runs on them, which means they proc and die during the cutscene. And then when you cut back, they just instantly catch up.
It happens to bosses that don't have a cutscene but have two phases. So the Godskin duo has two phases, but they don't have a cutscene. Like, the guy will just, you know, he'll cause a Black Flame tornado, and then he turns into Rubber Band Man, you know, that guy. That's considered two phases. And a guy, a streamer, he had the same video I sent out. He showed the streamer was fighting the Godskin duo, did blood loss and did something else to him, and then he did that. He was going into a second phase, and he just died. His health bar just disappeared. Boom.
Damn.
So,
yeah, well then who?
So that means I should play now, right? Back. That means I get an easy run now?
Well, yeah.
You should play, Manny.
When I get a little more time. I really need to finish off Nier Replicant.
Oh, man.
I'm already go ahead. We'll talk about that later. Right, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I have a question for the veteran Souls
for the rings. Player.
for the Elden Ringed leaders, has there been a Soulsborne game that has had this drastic of patchwork in terms of just in terms of meta sort of compensations?
No, I don't think so. Because like Bloodborne had a couple of patches, but they weren't like major things, right? They try to rebound stuff, but I think what has happened is the scale of this game is so huge, and I don't know what kind of feedback From Software is getting with this game, because there's certain things that I was pissed that they nerfed and buffed. Like, they seem to be favoring sorcery, so every patch it's like sorcery just gets better and better and better. Faith doesn't really move. This time it has. This time they buffed Faith spells. But, like, when they just randomly, like, the Sword of Night and Flame, we nerfed it. Why? Who was, like, spamming that shit? Like, I can understand, they slowed down Hoarfrost damage because it was just absolutely spammable and it's killing people. But yet, everybody gave feedback on Rivers of Blood because people in PvP are just running that shit and slicing people instantly. It's like the win button, you know? And they didn't change it. They actually made Blood better. Like, you know, so I don't get it. But there's been a lot of patches, yeah. This game.
I feel like they've done this. I mean, I agree with Chris that not on quite this scale. But I think I've seen them balance quite a bit of. Because remember, Chris, like, the meta kept changing. And, like, especially, like, Dark Souls 3, for instance. Like, for a while, Pyromancy was, it didn't work. It, you know, it was pointless. And then for a while, it actually worked. And then for a while, the meta build was running this. And then for a while, Dark Sorcery was the big thing. So, like, yeah. it people would shift it. It's basically that people go and they abuse something, and then after enough people complain, from software kind of comes and goes, oh, okay. Sometimes they just hear you and be like, nah, whatever.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, that would happen in Dark Souls 2 also. Like, you could throw lightning all day, and it was like the best thing ever, and they just nerfed it immediately.
I remember like, when they nerfed lightning. That was a sad day.
Yeah. Yeah, so Carlos says, short answer is they have done this, but not to this level. Like this, the patch notes, every single time they've made an update is huge. That's why for some things I've invested in because I like the weapon, but some things I'm like, I'm not going to invest in it because they may just screw me over. Like in this last patch, because I like to tank, that's why I'm running around with that giant gravestone shield. So if I paired it with the Great Shield Talisman, I had 100% guard block. They were like, no, can't do that anymore. So the Great Shield Talisman actually scales down if you have high guard block. So I can't do that anymore. I'm like, son of a bitch.
Yeah, because I mean, it seems like, because I've been seeing, I get a lot of Elden Ring videos suggested to me on YouTube these days. And it's just interesting because a lot of the videos that have been made when the game came out, first couple of weeks, even before patch 1.04, it's like some of these videos are irrelevant. They're tutorials, or you know, they're trying to teach you how to, you know, have better stats in the game, or you know, weapon combinations with, you know, different things and attributes. And it's like all of that stuff is, you know, null and void to an extent, you know, because they keep patching it. So it's just interesting to me because I've always, from afar, even though I've played this game, I've played a lot of the Soulsborne games before, I've never really been into the Soulsborne game like I am with Elden Ring. So it's just interesting to see how it changes even a month or two after it's been out, and how, you know, how consistently it is. I used to think they were just finished products for the most part when they came out. But Chris is right. I mean, this is their first, you know, sandbox game that they've ever released with a Soulsborne title, and a lot of things to take into account. And a lot of I saw this video of it's like, because you know, people have been posting a lot of rune farm videos, and there's a video of this dude that says you can farm runes by making yourself doing a taunt, right? So you can have someone invade you, and you essentially hide in the middle of nowhere where they can't find you, and they'll eventually quit, or someone will get summoned to your world, and you just leave your PlayStation or Xbox on, and it'll just, you know, accumulate runes. But apparently that's been fixed. So you know, it's interesting. There's so many dynamics to this game. There's so many things that, you know, have to, you know, be taken into account, that at first glance it's not surprising that they're doing all these changes, but then, you know, it's crazy.
I mean, it's definitely a live game. It seems like it would be a static single player game, but it gets treated like a live multiplayer, which is good, right? Because that's the thing that keeps multiplayer, especially PvP, alive. You know, it's PvP is a huge component of these games, so you'll notice a lot of, you know, what you get on YouTube is the same thing that you see getting nerfed, because a lot of things you see on YouTube are, they're almost exploits. You know, they're insanely powerful builds that shouldn't be like this. Click now to check it out and respec your character to own in PvP by cheesing everything in sight.
I wonder if they fixed that skipping glitch that a lot of the speedrunners have been using.
Yeah,
the one that's sort of like. There's a glitch like that. you can essentially teleport to one of the a different bonfire or something like that. And then there's also another one where literally can it's like a weird like jumping glitch that essentially pushes you to a different part of the location. And the weird thing about it is that the like let's say if they fall from a great distance, because the environment hasn't been drawn in, they essentially land fine. It's weird. Like there's this one I can't remember his name, but he's the guy who found the secret the secret location in Demon Souls that Blue Point added. But this guy is like a famous like speedrunner, and he has done like he you know specializes in the Souls games, and yeah, he beat the game in like 7 minutes. You know, using these sorts of different things, and then in 30 minutes after, you know, by beating all the main bosses. So yeah, I wonder if they closed down a lot of those exploits that the speedrunners were using, or did they leave them in?
I was surprised because I didn't know about these things, and I saw a video. It's like finished Elden Ring in under 7 minutes. And I'm like, how the hell is that even possible? Since I beat the game already, I'm like, how is that even possible? And then I watched the video, and then yeah, they did exactly as Manny mentioned. Is they just glitched out of the freaking map and went to like a different part of the map. So yeah, I'm you know, I know that Mario would also do this. A lot of the speedrunners would also take advantage of map glitches to traverse through the environments to get through the game. But yeah, I was really surprised. I didn't know that this was sort of, you know, accepted by the speedrunning community as, you know, at least for a game like Elden Ring that seems really you know, cherished in a way that's like a lot of puritanicals in a sense when people talk
about it. But you got to remember in any Souls game, a win is a win, and that is embraced by the community. So if like you leap off and happen to, you know, warp through an invisible wormhole that takes you to the end boss, and you one shot him. Good for you. How'd you find that wormhole, bro?
I mean, the one thing, like the amazing thing, is just like him. Essentially, the one point he essentially jumped around a mirror that he was supposed to walk into to go to a different part before he goes to the final boss. So, like behind it, you can see the final boss standing there, but you have to go to this mirror thing before him. So yeah, he just goes around it. He jumped around it, and then he fought that guy. So I'm like, what the hell? But yeah, it's interesting, you know, that stuff.
The problem with that stuff is like, and I mean, I guess it revitalizes the community. Is that most likely for some of that stuff, From Software will patch it, and that's going to render their speedrun times, basically with an asterisk next to it. They won't be official, and they'll have to do the speedrun again. Now, there are certain things when you play the game, like jumping from this rooftop all the way into that rooftop, which is technically a different zone, is honestly kind of there, I'm pretty sure, on purpose. It gets really ambiguous sometimes, but like there was a whole area where like I couldn't get to the north part of the map because there was a huge cliff, you know, between the north part and the south part of the map, except for these one set of stones that if you just happened to jump just right, you could make it up there. And It was barely perceptible that these were there on purpose. Like they were just almost just a little too perfect, but still really obscure and hidden. So I know that From Software has a history of being like, yeah, I mean, if you follow this rock to this rock to this rock to this rock, you can jump on this roof and then jump onto this roof and then drop down in the middle of the place that you would normally have to fight your way through. That's normal. I mean, even in the first zone, you have like a road where they're like, hey, here's Stormveil. And if you're like, what's down that road? And they're like, nothing. Definitely not the next zone down a very long and winding path that looks like you're not supposed to go down. But you go down that, you kind of come to a bridge, you find a bridge. You're like, hey, what's over there? You jump down, you walk over, and there's like a little bush, and you walk past the bush, and there's like a little path past the bush, and you just keep walking, and then there's some fucking wolves, and you just keep walking, and you just skirt the edge of a cliff, and the entire time you're like, I have no idea where the fuck I am or if I'm supposed to be doing any of this. And all of a sudden you pop out in Lernia. The reason I say it's ambiguous is there are so many times, even in Stormveil, like how many times were you guys, I don't know, not when you're not given the tour, like were you shuffling around at like the edges of, you know, the edge of a wall where you're kind of standing on like this little tiny platform, you're looking at another platform way down there, you're like, I mean, can I jump down there? Will I be able to get back up if I jump down there? And like you just keep going and keep going and keep going, and you're like, I'm like 95% sure I'm not supposed to be doing this. I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing. And then you find a talisman. And you're like, what the fuck?
They're like, you got something for your trouble.
Yeah, but like most of the time, I'm like, you expected somebody to go get, like, I was pretty sure I was breaking the game by jumping from that roof to that roof, from over here to over here, and then I ship it across this thing.
Yeah, nope. Well, Brett, we remember we were playing with your buddy, and he found behind the beast sanctum that you could jump down. I'm like, what do you mean you could jump down there? That's a sheer cliff. There's a root sticking out here, and you just jump down.
Yeah, yeah, the whole time we're like, is it rendered down there? And he's like, I mean, there are enemies, and we're like, I mean, then you're supposed to be there, I guess. He eventually found a place none of us had ever seen or heard of, and found a sword that enhanced beast miracles, which I've also never heard of.
Yeah.
As somebody who did incantations, you think I would have like noticed that shit? Not, it doesn't pop up on like I'll have Elden Ring and things in the background now that I've beaten it, and be like, oh, here's some swords that you missed, everything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good background stuff while you're drawing. Never heard of any of that.
Or Vati doing his little videos.
Oh yeah, and yeah, no, those are great, and that's some of the cool fun the fun stuff is like once it's done, you can kind of like listen to a podcast about lore theory while you're mm-hmm. doing some art or something like that. If you didn't know, I'm the resident lore master here, so I really enjoy that shit.
Oh yeah, Brett definitely is the lore master. And who's the guy? he's a really popular. I mean, they're all, anyone who does an Elden Ring video is popular at this point. Mm-hmm. But there's a specific British guy that I watch his videos.
Yeah, it's Vadi.
He's
yeah.
like,
yeah, okay,
he's
okay.
like, hello, welcome to Elden Ring.
Oh, no, that's
welcome
him, yeah,
to
that's
another video.
Him. Well, yeah, I mean, Vadi has a light. Vadi has a little more of like a dramatic like readings, like, and when they went to the other side, they found a great miracle, the tree of life. You know, it's like, it was like, it's almost like done like a documentary
was,
a little bit, like
pretty good.
Yeah. I watched a bunch of his videos, so I have interest.
This guy that I'm trying to do, he sounds like he's just got back from his 9-to-5 job. He's like, okay, I'm gonna teach you how to get a new room farm.
Oh, there's that DPJ guy, he sounds like that. He does all the rune farm videos. I've seen his videos.
Yeah, but see, this is where I think Elden Ring is insidious, because like, because it commands so much community involvement, it inevitably leads to things like that, and podcasts and YouTube videos about things that you missed, which then drive people to watch these things, which then drive traffic through the game, and it kind of becomes this repeating circle. Yeah. Right, like, and you start having audience involvement, shit gets out of hand real fast.
And that's something that, and I want to give credit to Brett. That's something Brett's been preaching for the longest. And one of the best things about this game is definitely the community. I mean, you summon a random person out of nowhere, they always wave at you or bow or do something where it's like, hey, I'm here. And like, even if you're in an area that you've never been before and you summon, it's like, oh, yeah, just summon someone. They'll go out of their way to show you all the like nooks and crannies of a dungeon, for example. It's like, hey, you know, there's a stone sword key. I mean, they won't say it, but they'll lead you to a random stone sword key that's on the other side of what the boss area is of the map. So I really, you know, and it's way too common. You know, it's not something out of the ordinary. It's more of the standard that the community has done with this game, and it's really nice. And gotta give a shout out to all the Melania helpers, because that area before you go Melania is, you know, for the people who haven't played this game, Melania is one of the toughest bosses, and a lot of people think she's the toughest boss. And you go to that pre fight, there's hundreds of freaking of those summon symbols, you know, people ready to help. So,
so she's harder. Yeah, she's harder than the final boss, right?
She's harder than the Elden Beast. Elden Beast isn't that hard.
Well, I guess this is not the time to tell you that I seen a video of someone who defeated her without rolling, jumping, blocking, parrying, iframes, spirits, or ranged damage.
What did they do? Damn.
That wasn't the potheaded guy, right?
They had a very strong, stern talking to with her.
Yeah. What?
He just poked her with a stick.
What? Oh no! They're doing the Resident Evil runs now, where you just take the weakest weapon and just keep on like poking them until they die.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, no, that's a time honored tradition. Mm-hmm. Here's what I think is funny, and it's par for the course on this. And I know we've kind of talked about this kind of thing before, Chris. I had so much trouble with the Elden Beast. I beat Melania my third try.
Interesting.
Oh shit! I had the opposite because I was just like, okay, this guy does holy damage, so it's winning my wardrobe. I'm like, okay, here's all the holy damage negation. I'll cast this, and this, go in there, and summon my black knife summon, and then whooped his ass. I was like, there you go.
So no,
Melania, I was like, Jesus Christ, dude, that's like, how is it? Take 157. All right, I'm gonna roll through this. I can't roll through that. Oh, shit.
So attempt one. Let me paint you a picture. Attempt one. I walk in, she launches herself at me, immediately kills me. I'm like, all right, that's how we're starting off. All right, I didn't know it was like that. I thought we were talking for a minute, but let's do this shit. Attempt two, walk in, beat her down through her first phase, because that wasn't that bad. Then the rot angel comes out, she's hovering in the air like a motherfucker, slams down with her sword right after immediate transformation, kills me. All right, go back in, beat through the first phase. Okay, notice you're reacting to poise. We're doing pretty well right here. Second phase comes down, turns into the thing, slams down. I dodge out of the way, go, ha! And she fucking explodes and I die. And the third time I go in, beat her down the first phase. She slams down, dodge out of the way, then dodge out of the way when she explodes again, and then murdered her face.
Oh.
But the Elden Beast like kept like... Like, I'd fucking hit him, and then he'd run out of my spell range, and I'd just fucking spend forever just getting pelted by magic, chasing him down, and then get over there and be like, ah, yeah! Hit him with my whips, and he'd just be fucking gone.
Yeah, he reminded me of a... Gold
stars the whole time.
Yeah, he reminded me of a Sekiro fight, because I just treated him like the last guy in Sekiro. Like, I would just circle him. So when he got out of the way, I'm like, okay, he's probably going to throw shit in the air. And then he does. So I just run around him in a circle and all the stars miss me. Like every single one. I'm like, okay, I know what you're doing. And then I just run up to him and just start smacking him around again.
It just goes to show how like I think the bosses in these games are so well built, because each one definitely stresses a different type of play style. No matter what your skill, what you're good at, or what you're bad at, there is a Dark Souls boss designed to piss you the fuck off.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, she pissed me off, and then I ended up beating her. I summoned a dude, and he was running Rivers of Blood, and I'm like, I got one too, bro, and we just ganked her. It was like Night at the Roxbury. It's like, just get in between these Rivers of Blood, and you're just going to stay there.
Oh, no, see, we ended up winning by me and my mimic doing pest threads like throwing candy out at a parade. We were just, yeah, woo, yeah, more!
Oh, see, that's a perfect example. That's another thing that got nerfed. Mimic tier used to be the fucking shit. Your mimic could play better than you. It's like, my mimics are better at me than I am.
You know, everybody says that. My mimic is dumb as hell.
Oh, no, like, now it's dumb. Now they patched it. Brett, they dumbed it down because it was too good.
It
sucks.
I heard that they increased the AI but decreased the damage.
No, it was the opposite. They decreased the AI. I mean, the mimic was passive. Your mimic used to drink Estus and fucking cast spells, heal itself, fucking run every type of spell you had.
My mimic
wouldn't
even dodge.
Yeah, I mean, I would always cast him because I had my talisman or whatever, the seal in my hand and my best weapon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yo, this motherfucker, and then I was still using the Sword of Night and Flame. That motherfucker just used that shit constantly. He was just like casting everything, fire, magic.
I mean,
using the seal, like, everything.
Do mimics like essentially have like a like like the way they play is based on the things that you constantly do, or is it just randomized?
No, it's
it's kind of randomized, and I'm not sure what the program is, because like, for instance, like Chris, I have two whips and then a flame and a shitload of magic. My mimic never uses my magic. Even when I cast the mimic with one whip and one like talisman, she'll immediately switch to two whips, not cast any magic, not dodge, just try and face roll the boss, whipping them and just getting your ass whooped left and right. I sat there watching before. I was like, bitch, dodge, roll away. They wrote you a signed letter that attack is coming. Like, I'm over here on the other side of the battlefield. I was like, bro, really? You're just going to fucking face roll that? I mean, the only thing that it's good for is it looks like me and can take an ass whooping. I heard that they increased the AI and people were like, yeah, mine will dodge every once in a while. Now I'm like, oh, fucking great. Because mine was asking to pet the bunnies. I'm going to be real honest with that.
Well, I mean, even for me, it's like she would I'm a mage, right? So I have all these spells. My freaking mimic tier is like, hey, I'm going to go through the greatest hits. I'm gonna run the moon, you know, Renala's moon. I'm going to do the freaking Comet Azure. I'm going to do everything. And it's like, it seems like a kid with, you know, that can't stay with the same album and just changes the track every second. And but yeah, I mean, the Mimic Tier, I'm with Chris. Mimic Tier was a tank. It would heal itself in really, like, really clutchly and stuff. But after the patch, and you know, for me, it was like I had to go to New York. Well, I didn't have to. I wanted to go to New York. Made it sound bad. I came back, and then my Mimic Tier, I heard, you know, they got a little bit, you know, nerfed, but I didn't expect this much.
It drank rainwater while you were gone, bro.
yeah, it was bad. It kind of got really dumbed down.
So they're about as dumb as the Bloodborne AI partners.
Yes,
because those most of the Bloodborne AI partners are always like dumb. Like they just wouldn't, like, you just had them there to just get in the way of the monster or whatever that's in the room, just the long enough so that you could hit it. You know,
I mean, that's all my mimic has ever done. But then again, like, I think mine is a little bit different than most people because it probably just goes off raw numbers. And as somebody who procs stat effects a lot, my mimic is probably just looking at my whips being like, well, this is the strongest thing I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, on paper, it is. But that's not how my character works. So I think it's just it would be cool if it actually studied how you play, but I'm pretty sure it's making number based decisions.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is that it probably chooses your, like with Carlos, it probably chooses your biggest spells, your most powerful spells, or, you know, because that's when you guys are saying that they drink the Estus Flask to heal, like I was like, oh, so it does it. Look at the percentage of how much you use those things. That would be an interesting way to sort of program your mimic, where essentially it pretty much based on, you know, because the games keep track of all the times that you hit things, right? Or, you know, the percentages of all you know, of these things. So why wouldn't it follow that? You know.
Well, I mean, I think that's a nemesis system kind of thing, but it is something I'd like to see in video games. You could actually probably pretty easy run some sort of script that recorded your controller inputs in reaction to, like,
well, I mean, like
the thing that you're targeting,
like,
and then run a basic kind of AI on it and do a predictive AI.
Like, I mean
Chris,
like,
would be able to answer that better.
Like, fighting games used to do this. Like, I remember Virtua Fighter.
We thought that they used to do it, but we never knew what degree they did it to. They're just like, yeah. Oh, it learns from you, and you're like, what is that? Does it just notice I'm hitting a lot of heavy attacks and then do a block?
Well,
like,
I mean, I did, like, I remember when me and Tony were doing, you know, playing, it was like that version of Virtua Fighter, I think it was on PlayStation 2 or 3, I can't remember which one it was, but all I know is that, like, eventually we got, it got to a point where it was somewhat like fighting Tony, because Tony always used to use, like, hard buttons, like, the most strongest hit buttons in order to do, like, And then mine, I always usually do combos, so it always sort of like did more combos and things that I would do. So it seemed like it sort of looked at the percentage of how much you do these sorts of things and sort of use that as a way. And Evil Chris, his AI version of himself was like impenetrable. Like, you couldn't, like, he was already really good at most fighting games in general. So just fighting his fake AI version of himself was just like, it's just like fighting him.
See, I would love that, because I'd like to see, like if you're just not doing well at Elden Ring, that your mimic tier is just bad, and you like get a watch and you're like, oh fuck, is that what I'm doing?
Yeah.
This is the first, I don't know about you guys, but the first time I saw my mimic tier, I'm like, let's see what this looks like from the other side. It wasn't that bad. I knew what to do, but I do gotta say, I fought Hoslo, And that motherfucker, like, I had no idea he had two Hoslow's Petal Whip and Bloodhound Step until I fought him, and I was like, oh, same, but different.
Barry Burton says, its CPU is a neural net processor, a learning computer. The more contact it has with human, the more it learns.
I am interested, like, Chris, I think you would be the best person to answer this. Like, how possible is it to create predictive AI based on player behavior?
I mean, it's not hard anymore. They use that kind of stuff. Major companies have it, like Google has DeepMind and Facebook had something. I think it was Elon Musk's AI project that,
yes,
I think beat the guy at Go, the Go champion in China. Like, the AI beat him. It learned so fast, it was able to beat the guy who was like a multi-year champion at Go. And so it's not hard anymore, especially if you have the resources behind it. Like, DeepMind has a ton of servers and whatever. And we've seen this with like IBM Watson beating Kasparov at chess, and so it can be done.
Hmm. Interesting.
I want to mention, I want to gloat a little bit. You know, shout out to Tony. Also, he got his platinum.
Oh, whoa, platinum brothers.
We got the platinum brothers, and shout out to Chris for helping getting the platinum. I don't know if you already got yours, because I know you wanted to get that. You had to get that other ending, Chris.
Oh,
but,
I'm on my way. Yeah, I got one more.
We got a platinum in waiting, and your boy got the platinum.
That's right.
Nice.
And yeah.
I mean,
yeah, Brett, just to add to what you're asking about, it is totally possible, because how long into the game do you fight her, out of interest? Because I have no point of reference.
A significant amount, more than halfway.
Okay, yeah, so it's possible to have a algorithm running in the background that learns based on your behavioral patterns as to when you drink your Estus, what type of moves you make, like, are you very block heavy or are you attack heavy, you know, and then over, like, as you play the game, it learns how you are doing stuff, and then it uses that to empower the mimic. So yeah, it's totally possible.
I would think it's just it could be as easy as just a whole bunch of, you know, set of counters where, you know, you already have the AI for the thing to do something, and it's like, okay, you know, just have a counter. It's if when this character has, you know, this amount of health, do they start using this spell, or they start, you know, frantically healing, or, you know, I don't, it's like, in basic sense, it shouldn't be too hard to do. It's just, you know, I mean, and like Chris mentioned, there's just a whole bunch of stuff of deep learning algorithms and neural nets and all this stuff that, you know, is already doing this at a really high level. And yeah, I mean, we got the Nemesis system.
Mr. Nemesis.
Nemesis. Also, before I forget, I do, you know, I do want to give a huge shout out to Alexander. I'm thinking about you right now. And yeah. Alexander's a pot, by the way. I just want to mention.
Pour one out for Alexander.
Pour one out for Alexander.
Poor guy. He just wanted to be a great warrior.
But then, since he's a pot, should we pull one in?
Oh, yeah, I called him the Kool-Aid Man when I saw him. Like, oh, Kool-Aid Man.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay. He's got a little pot. I got to say, one of the funniest moments I had in Elden Ring was when Alexander called himself a croc. I mean, that was fucking priceless.
Yo, man. There's a croc pot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these types of experiences, and I do want to give a shout out, even though I got my heart ripped away again. I did get my hugs bag, and you know,
I told you she was still there, Rob.
I didn't want to believe you, Chris. I don't want to have my high hopes up like these Sony guys that think that you know, Corey Barlog's gonna release something. anyways, the I got my hugs back, but. I guess I'm not going to spoil what happens after. And I mean, if you've gotten the pattern of what Elden Ring is, you know what's going to happen next. But
something bad.
Isn't it always something bad?
Yeah, that's what the pattern of Elden Ring is.
it's really bad. It's, you know, Miyazaki and George R. R. Martin getting together. Yeah, nothing good's gonna happen.
Oh, that's the Red Wedding!
Dude, Miyazaki has this idea, like, I'm not sure, like, who hurt him or what the deal is, but most stories you, that come out of any Souls game are, hey, did you meet somebody in your adventures? And you're like, yeah. And they're like, they are incredibly worse off for it. Probably dead. And you're like, oh, well, Jesus Christ. Like, I didn't mean to do that. Like, there's always one of those. Like, if you just say yes to every NPC, people almost always get murdered. And in this one, like, if you just say, like, yeah, sure, I'll let the dog eater out. What's the worst that could happen? Well, you'll find out.
Well, I mean, like, it's the thing of, you know, the thing about most of his games, that there's sort of, there's no right way. That doesn't always end badly, but it always ends off what seems like tragic for everybody, even no matter what route you sort of choose, you know?
Yeah, man. Shout out to Elden Ring. I don't think it's got a great story, but it's got amazing lore, and I'm looking forward to. And Tony actually mentioned this on Twitter and kind of gave me the idea. He's like, "Yeah, I finished the game. Now I'm gonna watch a whole bunch of YouTube videos about the story."
Oh,
and I'm
yeah.
like, "Yep, I think that's the best way to do it."
Yeah, I mean, like I tell you, Vati Videos is definitely one of the better YouTubers. There's also a few others that do some really great lore videos, though Vati's hasn't. Posted too many things, but you know, when he actually does, they're actually very well produced lore videos where he'll get really nice footage of the characters and stuff like that.
Well, he did a recent one. He's probably gonna put out one that's like 6 hours long when he's done.
Yeah, I think he even corrected himself. He corrected an old lore video. He's like, I misconstrued what this meant. So I used the YouTube editor to cut those sections out of the video. I'm like, damn, you could do that. But yes, that looks like it. Well, that was our final topic. So, does anybody have anything to plug? Spirit of Adam?
The nuke. I don't know.
We got The Walking Dead is coming back. The Fear of the Walking Dead is now Mothership, and yeah, it's the nuke, and going back to our grind with Mr. Richard Bailey Jr., who's a co-host, and yeah, Carlos Romero's not in this show. I don't know, he canceled
because Carlos can't stand Fear.
I can't stand Fear and The World Beyond. I wasn't even gonna give it a shot, and I'm glad I did. I'm glad I didn't. And yeah, make sure to check out I Am Negan, which is a Walking Dead podcast hosted by Adam and Mr. Richard Bailey Jr. And I'm occasionally there for the Mothership episodes. And yeah, Fear the Walking Dead's going on right now. And they covered the last episode that should be on The Coalition on YouTube. Just search The Coalition with a K on YouTube or thecoalition.com with a K. And or I Am Negan on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And that's I Am Negan.
So for me, I actually had a really big thing kind of happen this actually today or Thursday. The piece that me and Kari Randolph did for Fortnite actually showed up. We are part of the Wu-Tang Clan Fortnite gear promotion.
Oh shit.
And yeah, we did a piece of all, you know, a bunch of the, you know, the you know, a bunch of the Fortnite characters wearing WooWear. So so if you're a Fortnite player and you're into Wu-Tang Clan, you can go out there and pick up the thing. You get all kinds of fun stuff, like you get like Wu-Tang weapons, you get a bunch of old school WooWear, and they do also emotes, like they do the Wu, you know, sign and all that stuff. So there you go. Elo in your Fortnite. So there you go. So that's it. So that's the end of the show. I am Emilio Lopez, and I am joined by Carlos Romero.
Yo, peace out, everyone. Take it easy.
Brett Murdoch.
It has been real. Party people.
Brian Majoma.
Remember, guys, Wu-Tang is for the children.
Yes. And Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
So, later, guys. And remember to get your questions in. Throw it on your questions on this Sunday. So, see you then. Later, guys.
Deuces.
Deuces.